We've got the one and only former auctioneering congressman right here with us on WCRS from the great state of South Carolina, Congressman Jeff Duncan. How are you this morning, Jeff?
Well, Ann, I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me on. It's extraordinary times that we're experiencing in this nation, so it's great to have an opportunity to talk with you and your listeners.
Well, it is, and every day it seems like something new happens. I mean, whoever thought, Jeff, that we would be in this time where nothing is really stable, everything is changing all the time.
And it changes on an hourly basis, but you know, I think it's important that people take this coronavirus, COVID-19, very seriously. Social distancing is working. It's actually changing a lot of the model numbers. And I believe that that is the reason nationwide that we're seeing fewer cases and fewer deaths, just because people are using common sense. They're listening to what their leaders are telling them. They're staying away from other people in large crowds. And so we're starting to see, hopefully, the curve flatten out, and we can get Main Street back open, people back to work soon.
Well, speaking of that, have you had any conversations that you could tell us how we're going to get this thing back opened up, the economy I'm talking about? This is, I look at it and I just, it worries me to death, Jeff. I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it should. 65% of all Americans are employed by small businesses. Small businesses are the ones that are really struggling. I think that's why Congress has really stepped up to the plate with the payroll protection plan and with what we've done with small business loans to try to make sure that there is money available so that these small businesses can have the cash available to keep their employees on the payroll, so that when they do open back up, it's not a rehiring process. It's just cutting the lights back on and having their employees show back up to work. So there's been about $98 billion put out there already in the small business loan slash grant program that's out there that was created in the CARES Act. That is about one-fourth of the money that was allocated, but we know, because of the overwhelming response that we've had nationwide, we know that that allocated amount, $350 billion, is going to be allocated pretty quickly, probably by sometime next week. So the Senate is acting today, I think, to I don't want to say it's phase four coronavirus legislation. It's more like phase 3.1, because it'll be a supplemental appropriation of about $250 billion to go into that program for small businesses and medium-sized businesses that they can tap into, which are loans initially by the SBA that will convert to grants. It'll be total forgiveness if they don't furlough or lay anyone off during this time. So that helps the small businesses with their cash flow. So that Mitch McConnell over in the Senate will probably take action on that today. I'm not sure what will happen. We're just watching like everybody else. And then the larger businesses, the Wall Street type businesses, are really covered under what the Treasury Department's doing with loans through that same CARES Act, allocated, I think, about $750 billion. I'd have to look that number up, and maybe a little bit smaller than that, but allocated a good bit of money so that money can be injected into the system to help the Wall Street businesses. And that's through bonds and grants and loans through bigger banking institutions. Sure. And Wall Street and the Treasury itself.
Sure, but my question really goes to the fact, how do we get this economy back going when the curve flattens and we're told that we can start flipping switches back on at businesses, but the particularly businesses that have been closed for over a month or so? How does this economy start rolling out? I guess my question goes to, is there any plan that is in the works to open this economy back up? You know, President Trump keeps saying we're going to come back stronger and better and yada yada, but from where I'm sitting looking around, I don't see how, Jeff.
Well, I think he's correct. I think we will come back stronger. It's going to take a little while. You're going to see overseas manufacturing move back to the country. The supply chains that are hampered right now because of travel restrictions and whatnot are concerning to the businesses. And so you're going to see a lot of American companies that have overseas operations bring some of those operations back to this country. And I'll give you a prime example of that. BMW builds vehicles in Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina. And when a volcano happened in Iceland, this was probably 10 years ago now, it stopped air traffic from coming across that part of the Atlantic because of the ash plume. Well, BMW needs transmissions that were manufactured in Europe to go in automobiles manufactured in the United States here in upstate South Carolina. And when that supply chain was disrupted, BMW said, we can't have that. We can't have that disruption. And so they pretty much demanded that their transmission manufacturer, ZF, bring that manufacturing capability to the United States. And we have a plant in Lawrence County, South Carolina, that builds transmissions to make sure that they're available here in the United States and there is no supply chain disruption. So I believe what we're going to see after the economy gets opened back up, you're going to see a lot of that overseas manufacturing come back to this country so that there is no supply chain disruption. That's one thing the president keeps talking about. I think you're going to see that, especially in the pharmaceutical area and the healthcare arena. We drove with Obamacare, we drove a lot of the medical device companies overseas because of the medical device tax that was part of Obamacare. We've been working very hard to try to do away with that medical device tax. But now you're going to see, and medical devices are things like respirators and ventilators, you're going to see a lot of that manufacturing come back now. I think it's going to be a big push to do away with all the medical device taxes and allow that manufacturing to come back. So once the orders are lifted for staying at home and telecommuting and social distancing, when we feel like it's safer and when there might be some sort of therapeutics or some sort of treatment that can help with this COVID-19 prior to a vaccine or anything like that that have a lot of people concerned, I'm thinking more about therapeutics and treatments right now. If someone gets ill with COVID-19, how do we treat that person, get them to recover quickly so they can go back home or they can get out of their house and go back to work? That's important. I think that's really what the scientists are looking at right now. Long-term is vaccine. Right now is therapeutics and treatment. So whenever that order is lifted and, you know, Main Street businesses can open back up, one thing Congress has focused on is making sure that the folks that are out of work, that are at home, telecommuting or furloughed or just not at their jobs, that they have payroll protection, that they can still pay their bills, they can not get evicted or worried about getting evicted from their housing, that there is some sort of forbearance on payments that they have, an extension of that, a deferment to the end of the loan, so that, you know, we did the stimulus checks that are coming out, should start next week, so people will have cash in their bank that they can cover, you know, some of their outlays for food and other things. And so when Main Street does open back up, employees need to be able to go in and go to work. Hopefully they have not missed a paycheck. Hopefully they have money in the bank from the stimulus money so that when the Main Street is open back up, that it will be a little bit easier on those employees.
I understand. I am curious, and I guess we're not maybe not understanding my question. How do we start businesses back up? I mean, I understand all the things that the government's doing, but has there been any discussions about how do we turn the switch? How do we can't, what do we just go out and say, okay, everybody, go back to work. Let the presses run. Let everything happen here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Walmart's going to open its doors. I think the grocery stores
are
going to open their doors,
Jeff.
The hardware stores, and yeah, to some degree, yeah. And I think, you know, the printing companies will start printing T-shirts again, and embroidery companies will start embroidering, and you know, people will start getting out and buying the things that they have not been able to buy, and so there's going to be a need, and when there is a demand for those items, the manufacturers will crank back up. The issue I think you're getting to is, if you've got an assembly line and you've got 500 employees in your plant and they're all in close proximity to one another as they're manufacturing the widgets that we demand, you know, the concern is, you know, COVID-19 gets into that manufacturing facility and is spread among employees and they could possibly be out of work because of illness. How do you manufacture if you have that concern? I think, you know, it's just like any influenza. that we see. If an influenza runs through a manufacturing facility, it affects those employers the same way. They have to bring temps in. We've got to make sure that we know the right kind of hygiene, the right kind of sterilization, that the companies that come in and clean the common areas, the break rooms, the bathrooms, and other things in those plants where people congregate, that are doing it properly so that the virus is wiped away or killed during the cleaning period, so that it's not being spread easily. But I think this thing's going to be with us for a while. Hopefully we'll have a big downturn when the weather gets warm, like we do with most viruses. And so when Main Street is cranked back up, when people have money in their pocket and they're able to go out and start spending, and the manufacturing has to crank back up, that we understand that there is going to be some illness. There's going to be another uptick of this at some point. We just need to make sure, what's concerned me the whole way, Ann, and I think it has you as well from our past conversation, is how this could overwhelm the healthcare system with a tremendous number of cases. And I'm talking about very critically ill that have to go to the hospital, have to be intubated, have to get on a ventilator, what that would do to our healthcare system. And if it was overwhelmed, do the doctors and nurses and other healthcare providers, do they contract the illness, and then they're out of work and they can't treat the patients, and then we have an exacerbation of the illness itself. I think that's the biggest concern that Governor McMaster and others have had, is what this virus could do to the healthcare system. That's why you see temporary hospital tents set up in New York and other areas of the hospital that would normally be available for those procedures that are, you know, not life or death situations. Right. Those areas have been made available for COVID-19 patients, anticipating an overwhelming of the healthcare system. We haven't seen that. I think that's because of the measures the president's taken, that's the measures the governors have taken with social distancing, and what we as individual Americans have done to try to keep this virus from impacting us and impacting the hospitals.
Sure. Well, I understand that. And I just, like I said, I am just very concerned about things opening back up when they're able to open back up. And you bring up the point that people will go back to work and start paying their bills. But with this time out that we have had here, I think it's going to be very hard, even with the stimulus package that has been done. But let's move on. How about yeah. as a politician, how difficult is it for you to politic, and how is it for you not to be able to shake somebody's hand?
Well, I think the new normal is going to be less handshaking, but everyone will carry hand sanitizer for those times we do shake hands. Dr. Fauci said yesterday that the new normal might be no shaking hands. I don't see that happening. I think that's part of our culture, and we may see less of it, but I think it'll still go on. I think people will just be more cognizant about washing their hands, not touching their face, and using hand sanitizer. Yeah. But when you're walking a parade route, or you're in a crowd like a Faith and Freedom barbecue that we have, you know, people want to shake hands, have their picture made. There's going to be close proximity. We're just going to have to take more hygienic methods or measures.
Yeah, that's true. So as we know that things are going to open back up and everything, what are you looking for futuristically with what you would like to work on in Congress? I mean, you've been there for a while. The Republicans are going to take back the House, right? So where would you like to be futuristically in the House?
Well, before I answer that, let me just mention one other thing that kind of ties in with your question. And there's a double whammy right now on the American energy sector because of what Saudi Arabia and Russia have going on with a price war. OPEC Plus conference is going to meet today. The Russians pulled out of an agreement with OPEC, and Saudi just decided to punish them by increasing the supply of oil out there. And that drove the prices down to almost historic lows. It goes back to pre-1990, probably pre-1980 prices for gasoline. That's good for all of our constituents because it means less price at the pump for them. That means more money in their pocket. So when the economy does get kicked up, if oil prices are still where they are right now, that will help on one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is the American energy industry itself. And because of low oil prices, you're seeing areas like the Bakken and Permian Basin and Eagle Ford and Barnett Shale and offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, you're seeing a lot of producers of oil and gas struggle right now, struggling with COVID-19 and coronavirus, but also struggling with oil prices and the amount of investment they've had over the last decade and the energy renaissance that we've experienced. Now low oil prices means they can't function. And so we're working to try to alleviate some of the cash flow problems that the small and independent, medium-sized independent oil producers and gas producers have in this country by maybe delaying royalty payments or pausing royalty payments that they pay for the leases they have in the Gulf of Mexico. They pay that to the federal government. If they don't have to pay those royalty payments, then that's immediate cash for them to use that they don't have to send to the government. They can use to help stay afloat. So that's one thing I'm working on in the short term. Long term in Congress, I enjoy my time on the Energy and Commerce Committee. It's something I've wanted to work on for energy and environmental policy, using common sense regulations for air, water, and for, you know, just hazardous waste and what we're doing with plutonium and nuclear waste in this country. Energy and Commerce Committee gives me an opportunity in the next Congress, and if Republicans take control, we'll have a new chairman. Because Greg Walden, the current chairman, current ranking member and former chairman, is retiring. And so we will have a new chairperson for that committee. And I'm working with that chair, who I hope will be that chairperson. And I actually am very close to all the candidates for that chairperson slot to hopefully get a subcommittee chairmanship so that I can have a little more influence on energy or environmental policy. John Shimkus, Congressman Shimkus from Illinois, chairs the Environmental Subcommittee. Excuse me, he's ranking member of the Environmental Subcommittee. He's retiring this year, so that will free that chairmanship up. Fred Upton, I think, terms out on the Energy Subcommittee. You know, so there's some possibilities there to have a more impactful role on the Energy and Commerce Committee. At the same time, making sure that we've got the right people in the leadership positions. That's a Speaker of the House. That's a Majority Leader. That's the Majority Whip. That is Conference Chair. That is First Vice Chair. Making sure that we get some true conservatives in some of those positions so that they're in the room and they can influence the direction of the House once we take over next year in January, I hope.
I understand. How do you think it's going to be going forward? Because even if this thing is May-ish, that they're looking at possibly middle of May, maybe first part, somewhere in there, how do you think campaigning as far as an issue is going to be? I mean, we have seen almost a complete stop in campaigning. And how do you think that'll affect the elections going forward?
Yeah, the South Carolina primaries are scheduled for the second Tuesday in June.
Yeah, June 9th, 10th.
You know, we've already had filing, and so you're going to have primaries. Ooh, man, nobody's really campaigning for those primary slots right now.
Right.
And so it's going to be, you know, Katie bar the door once things open back up. I think you're going to see people putting signs out. You're going to see, you know, campaign stops in the primaries, and that's in South Carolina. And then you've got the presidential primary and conventions that are supposed to happen this summer. And I'm not sure whether the conventions will actually happen. You know, President Trump will be the Republican nominee. You know, do we do some sort of modified convention to make that formal nomination? And then on the Democrat side, you saw Bernie Sanders sort of drop out yesterday, suspend his campaign. That means Joe Biden will get most of the delegates. He has most of the delegates right now if there is no more primaries on the Democrat side, but they're going to have some sort of nomination convention as well. So whether that happens this summer or not, I think is still up in the air. And then you have a nationwide presidential election and local elections, statewide elections, local elections in all the states. They're supposed to happen in November. Well, what if when the weather starts cooling in late September, early October across the nation, you see another outbreak of COVID-19? What does that mean for how elections are handled? Mm-hmm. These are a lot of questions that are being asked and trying to be answered by both the parties, Republican and Democrat parties, but also by the state election commissions and by the federal government in how we proceed. What do we do? Do we do anything different? At the same time, I caution everyone from this whole push from the left for mail-in ballots and ballot harvesting. That means somebody goes door to door and actually collects absentee ballots or ballots door to door. That happens in California. That is just really open for a lot of fraud and abuse. And I think we saw some of that in California. I think there are cases that are going to
Jeff, you're breaking up. Jeff, you're breaking up. Hello, Jeff. You're breaking up.
I'm sorry. Let me change devices here.
There you go.
So David Valadao in California was actually leading at the end of the last congressional races by, you know, a fair 1,100-1,200 vote margin. But as time went on, his lead slipped and slipped and slipped as they brought in more and more ballots, and he ended up losing. Why do all the found ballots and all the ballots that come in after the fact and all that always change the election to the Democrats? That's just a rhetorical question. But you never see that happen on the Republican side. You never see a Republican win because who was losing at the end of the normal ballot count, who ends up winning because of found ballots in somebody's trunk or in a closet. You know, that's rhetorical asking that question as well.
I think, what was it, the Iowa caucus that they had up there was a good example of all that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we see it over and over. And so I caution everyone to not jump so quickly on a push for mail-in ballots or ballot harvesting, which is practiced in California. I think in-person voting is the way to go. I think there's a way to do that. You know, social distancing, 6 foot apart, clean the machines, provide gloves, whatever we need to do to keep the coronavirus from spreading through our voting apparatus. But there are things that we can do to have that election in November. That's important.
Okay. And, you know, lately we've had all this discussion about China not being up front about what was going on in their country. And now President Trump has started pointing fingers at the World Health Organization, rightfully so, I will say. But where do you think this is going as far as, is Congress going to do an investigation into it? What do you see happening on that? Because this has really changed everything about what was going on.
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is anyone that believes information coming out of communist China being accurate is deceiving themselves, and they're naive. China tried to poo-poo this virus outbreak for whatever reason, whether it was a virus that came out of the Wuhan biological weapons laboratory there and was released accidentally, or whether it was on purpose, or whether it was an actual natural occurrence of transmission from animal to human and then mutation so the humans could transmit it. Whatever the reason, China was very reluctant to express to the world the severity of this in Wuhan and across that province until too late. And I think their delay and their influence on the WHO, the World Health Organization, is real. And I think there is some culpability there with regard to the WHO that impacted policies that were implemented in Europe. And we saw an outbreak in Italy and Spain and across Europe and could have impacted the policies in the United States. And so somebody's got to be held accountable for those actions or inactions. And anything we have like this, an outbreak that is a biological outbreak, we need real data. We don't need politics and we don't need global positioning, because this is something that affects friends, allies, and adversaries. And so we need to make sure that we encourage countries like China and whatever in instances like this to provide real data and not worry about world perception quite as much. So I think there will be an investigation on, you know, how the U.S.'s response was. I do believe the president took all necessary action trying to close the flights from China because he saw China as the hotspot. That's what he was being told. There's a lot of rumors about memos. Look, don't be simplistic. This is a huge government. The president's dealing with a heck of a lot of stuff, from the war on drugs to securing our border to human trafficking to sex trafficking, sure, to our military, to readiness, to, you know, equipment purchases and major component systems, to dealing with adversaries like Iran and Soleimani and attacks on U.S. troops and terrorism in general, and trying to stop another 9/11. All these things the president deals with on a day-to-day basis. I'll guarantee you doesn't see every freaking memo that is written by some junior staffer within the White House or in the administration or the executive office building. And so
I believe the president took the necessary steps that he thought were prudent in trying to stop people coming from the hot spot. If you look now, I think there was an article came out today that most of the infections they believe in New York came from Europe. And we didn't stop flights from Europe until later because the president didn't really believe that that's where the transmission hot spots were. So there's going to be an investigation on, you know, how information flows to decision makers, who we can believe and who we should not believe, how we verify information.
And how much money we give out. And how much money we give out. How much money we give out to certain organizations.
Yeah, well, like WHO, there is already a push to hold back funding for WHO. I was on that bandwagon a long time ago, even way before COVID-19, looking at the money we give away to organizations like WHO, but also all foreign assistance as well. And people, we give money to countries that don't vote with us in the UN, but 20% of the time. You know, that's ridiculous. If you can't be our friend at the UN voting on things that are important in the United States, why should we give you all this money? But we continue to do that. So I think there's going to be a continual push to look at all foreign assistance, all money we give to organizations like WHO, and also at the same time trying to protect American liberties, because there's this push for, you know, global tracking of American citizens during the COVID outbreak. You know, where you and I are traveling to. Are we going to the bank? Did we go inside? Did we go into Walmart or CVS? How long did we stay? And compiling data on transmission, well, you know what? That's my privacy. Where I go is my concern. And we've got to make sure that we protect Americans' constitutional rights to privacy in the Fourth Amendment.
We've got to make sure.
There's going to be a push to track you, and there's going to be a push to keep you from being tracked.
Well, you know, I think we need to remember the Constitution, don't you think, Jeff? I mean, we're getting way over the edge here.
There's no doubt. And Jared Kushner had an article in Politico yesterday about tracking, and I was in contact with Rand Paul's staff about we were going to do an op-ed jointly with them about some of the president's responses. But when I saw that article, I backed off on that because I disagree with his son-in-law and his discussions about tracking. Because I believe in the Constitution. I don't think we should track Americans like that. That's just, if you want to voluntary sign up for that, that's one thing. That's voluntary. But if the government's tracking us, look, don't spy on me. We've had this conversation over and over about NSA spying and whatnot. I just think we're going to give up constitutional liberties for security, and that is wrong.
I agree with you. You are listening to WCRS. I know you got to go, Jeff, but is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners with Easter here and Easter being so different this year? Is there anything you'd like to say to close it out?
Well, first on that point is that if you're thinking you're having a bad week with coronavirus and out of work and staying at home and all that, just think about a guy named Jesus who had a terrible week this week, but it is actually a good week for all of us because he bought our salvation through the crucifixion and going to the tomb and his resurrection, which we celebrate on Sunday and Monday. And so he lives, he's risen, and I'm proud of that and glad that, and I am a believer, and I ask folks, if you're not, to look at what Christ has done for us. The second part is we have broken up my team. I have 16 and 17 employees. We've broken up our team in a coronavirus task force type situation where we have people that are dealing with the State Department overseas travel and people that are stuck over there, all the way down to small businesses and individuals that are looking to provide payroll protection and everything in between related to coronavirus. And so if you have a concern, if you can't get an answer, contact us through our website, jeffduncan.house.gov, and we will, you can just Google it, you'll find it. And we have a lot of information out there that you might find just by looking at our website. And then if you don't have your answer, there's contact information. One of my team members that specializes in that particular function will contact you. We'll try to get you the answers that you need. We're all in this together, working with the state government, the federal government, the White House, on a lot of different fronts. And that's what we're here for. My team is, I put them up against anybody. They're doing a fabulous job here. And we want to try to help our constituents. If they have needs at this time and they can't find an answer, we're going to find the answer out for you. So please let us help.
And is there a telephone number? Because a lot of our listeners are not on the internet, Jeff. Is there a telephone number you could give out?
So 202-225-5301 is our main office number, 202-225-5301. locally in the upstate, 224-7401, 224-7401. That's an 864 area code. That gets us our office in Anderson. You can email us, and the best thing is just Jeff at, let's see, I'd have to get you the email address.
That's okay.
You can get that on our website, jeffduncan.house.gov, and those phone numbers are pretty easy. And you can always just Google it. And Google has, it will bring up every phone number that I've given you right there and a link to our website, and then we'll get one of our staffers. Keep in mind, my offices are not being occupied right now because we're practicing the same thing we're asking everyone else to practice. That's social distancing. We're working remotely. Everyone's working every day, but they're working from home on their laptops and with their cell phones, and we're in communication. So let us help where we can, and you will get a response. It may take a little while, but you will get a response from one of my team members.
Last question, Jeff. Are you working out and staying in good shape?
You know, I'm just trying not to eat as much. I'm home, and my wife is she's doing the same thing. She's not working every day like she was. So two of my boys are home. One of them is a college student. He's home now, and he's actually in there on the computer in a class, virtual classroom right now. My middle son is on an abbreviated work schedule of every other day, so they're here more. What that means is she's cooking more. And and it's good home cooking. So I've got to make sure that I push away from the table. That's what I'm trying to do.
All right, Congressman Jeff Duncan, God bless you, and happy Easter to you and your family. Thanks so much for calling in this morning.
Well, happy Easter, Ann, and he is risen. God bless. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, you just heard it right here on WCRS, Congressman Jeff Duncan, talking about a lot of different things here. Hope you got some good info out of it, and of course know that congressmen's are here for you. So look up those telephone numbers and give him a call. Give his office a call if you're having problems. And of course, as he said, just check out his website.